glowing gray light shot 40 feet above everyone's heads and hung suspended in the air. Then he shouted jovially, "Let's eat!" Everyone cheered again. Covers were whipped off of the food and casks of ale were tapped. The feast had begun. Richter sat down on the bench and Randolphus stood to the side behind him. He looked at his chamberlain and said, "Oh, no. If I have to sit up here being looked at, then you will be joining me."
"It wouldn't be proper for me to sit next to you, my lord,"
Randolphus protested. "Proper hell! I don't mind taking your lead, and I appreciate your advice, but we won't be standing on pointless ceremony here. I can't stand useless traditions, so sit your bony ass down and share an ale with me." Richter's tone was full of laughter. The chamberlain smiled faintly and said, "As you wish, my lord. Now where is everyone else? At the very least, I want a few more people up here with me." He beckoned to a guard standing by the end of the table and told him to fetch Sion, Tarad, Isabella, Sumiko, and Krom. As the guard hurried off, one of the village women walked up and told him that his special request from the cook would be ready soon. She smiled shyly and gave an awkward curtsy when he thanked her. "Bring 6 more servings of food and drink, please, my dear. I will be having company up here." She curtsied again and rushed off to fulfill her lord's command. Randolphus settled in next to him on the bench and said, "As long as we have this time, my lord, there are a few more things..."
"Ah, stop! Good God, stop!" he said quickly.
The chamberlain stopped. Richter exhaled a sigh of relief. Then he looked at Randolphus and decided to seize this rare, quiet moment. "There actually is something that I wanted to ask you about. That bitch Sonore was an assassin. When I analyzed her, I saw that being an assassin was a specialization of the rogue profession. How does one become a specialist? Do you know anything about it?" Randolphus looked at him with an inscrutable expression. Richter looked back at him, slightly confused, but then the chamberlain's face smoothed, and he started speaking as if nothing had happened, so Richter wondered if he had imagined it.
"Well, my lord, as you may already know, to obtain a non-combat profession, you must reach a personal level of 10 and be a journeyman in a relevant skill. To obtain a combat profession, you must be a personal level of 20 and also be a journeyman. Each level that you reach after you obtain your profession, you are allocated a certain number of talent points. To become a specialist, you must reach a personal level of 30 and have saved enough points to buy the specialty."
Randolphus's answer just made a dozen more questions for Richter. "How many talent points do you get per level? How much does it cost to buy a specialty? How many specialties are there?" The questions came rapid fire, and for once the chamberlain was the one who looked overwhelmed.
"There are many factors that affect the answers to your questions, my lord. Certain races have a predisposition to certain professions, and so obtain more talent points per level. Consequently, you may suffer a penalty depending on your race if you choose the wrong profession. That is why you don't see many gnome barbarians. Humans typically have no racial predispositions or weaknesses, though this is not always the case. Humans born on the twins typically make better sailors, for instance, my lord. Also, the affinity you have for whichever skill got you into the profession also affects how many talent points you are given. There are also other random factors that can affect a person's profession. Humans normally get 10 talent points to distribute per level, but as all of this varies from person to person, no specific numbers have ever been recorded with any accuracy."
Richter nodded with resignation. Same shit. Nothing could ever be easy. At least he should get a bump if Randy was right about having a high affinity. His limitless ability would continue to help him progress. He held off on any more questions as several of the villagers arrived with their food and drink. One of the main cooks was with them and was holding a plate covered by a cloth handkerchief.
"My lord, we tried to follow your instructions as best we could. I hope that you are pleased."
Richter took the covered plate and analyzed the woman to get her name. "Thank you, Claren. I'm sure it will be wonderful." He made a mental note to see which of his cooks was of the highest level. He thought the idea of having a non-combat villager accompany hunting parties was possibly high risk, but definitely high reward. Who knew what a professed cook might be able to do for his people on a daily basis? Not wanting to wait any longer, he ripped off the cloth and sighed in contentment. Richter had never seen such a beautiful sight. He was so overcome with emotion that he got choked up. In front of him lay a thick slice of fresh bread, topped with a leaf of lettuce, a slice of tomato, and a ground patty of fresh beef blessed with a thick slab of melted cheese, 4 slices of crispy bacon, and finally another slice of bread. A tear escaped his eye as he saw his first hamburger in months. "Are you well, my lord?" Randolphus asked with a faint amount of concern. Richter didn't respond. He just took the miracle in front of him in both hands and treated himself to a deep bite. An explosion of wonder and spices filled his mouth. His eyes closed in bliss, and a faint croon came from the center of his being. The grease in the burger burned his tongue ever so slightly, and the smokiness of the bacon perfectly balanced the sharpness of the cheese. A smile graced his face, giving him a chipmunk appearance, as his cheeks were still stuffed from the large bite. Sion walked up just as Richter swallowed the first bite and asked the same question Randolphus had. The Lord of the Mist Village simply said, "They should have sent a poet." Everyone else that Richter had requested came to grace the high table. As the hundreds of villagers enjoyed good food and better camaraderie, so too did Richter's friends and confidants. He sat back and savored every single bite of his burger, one of the things he had missed most from Earth. True, there was no ketchup yet, but Richter resolved to fight one battle at a time. After he was done eating, he left the table and walked around amongst the villagers. Tirad insisted upon accompanying him, citing that more than half of the people present were new to the village. After his encounter with Sonore, Richter didn't argue. Randolphus came as well. Richter spent the next hour or so just walking among his people, shaking hands, sharing laughs, and listening to their compliments and complaints. Many people were deeply invested in their food or ongoing conversations, so they simply smiled and bowed their heads as their liege passed. Many others were well on their way to being deep in their cups, so they didn't even realize he was walking by. Richter was happy to see his people enjoying themselves. More than that, he felt fulfilled. He had made a home that he could be proud of, and proud he was. As great as walking around was, Richter realized he needed to give his speech quickly if he wanted people to still be coherent. Already loud shouting was coming from a group of dwarves, and a bit of shoving had broken out between 2 humans apparently vying for the affection of a young wood elf lass. Richter spoke to Randolphus, who nodded and began leading the way back to the raised stage at the end of the picnic tables. He sent Futin to ask Sion and the others to join him. Richter climbed the stairs and looked out over the festivities. Laughter abounded, and many of the children seemed to be playing a game of tag whose rules shifted from moment to moment. People began to notice him on the stage and started chanting his name. The call was picked up by others, and soon the feast resounded with, "Lord Richter! Lord Richter! Lord Richter!" He raised his arms first in happy reception of the chant, but then turned his palms downward to quiet his people. Soon silence reigned, and the people waited to hear what their lord had to say. "I hope you are all having a good time!" Cheers broke out again, and Richter had to wait for them to die down. "As I said before, this feast is a celebration of the accomplishments of those who have been here. It is also a welcome to those who are new here. There is a third reason, however. When many of us got off of the boats from Eve, this village was barely discernible from unbroken wilderness. It was raw material, and so were we. Times are changing now. We have made this place into the beginnings of a village. We have made ourselves into the beginnings of a community." Many of the first wave villagers were nodding and sharing looks of pride. Most of the new people were just looking a bit uneasy, unsure as to where this was going. They were used to leaders taking whatever they wished, whenever they wanted. Richter was still an unknown to them, and they feared for their futures. "Things are changing," he repeated. "We are getting larger and stronger, but that means others are taking notice of us. We have been attacked and suffered losses. I have been attacked personally by agents of Ronin, the head of the Nightblades." Many of the villagers shouted out, some in anger and some in dismay. They all knew of the bloody underworld leader. They had all heard of Richter's raid on Ronin's base and his freeing of the non-humans, most of whom were now villagers. Behind him, a woman called his name. Richter turned his head and saw Isabella looking back at him with determination on her face. Gone was the wounded creature who had hidden beneath the branches of the quickening for weeks. What he saw now was a woman who had chosen to stand and face both her past and future head on.
"May I speak, my lord?"
she asked. Richter nodded and stepped back. She took the center stage.
"I have already told my story to those who came here before. But for those of you who are new, I will tell you what our lord has done for us. What he has done for me. Lord Richter fought the Nightblades in their very base of power to save many of us. After he had already saved so many, he infiltrated the home of Count Stonick to find me. Still he wasn't done, though. To bring me to safety, he fought through an ambush of the Nightblades. An ambush that claimed the life of my husband's longtime friend Jeremy."
Richter looked over at Tirad, but the man just stared straight ahead, his jaw tight. Isabella continued speaking with intense emotion.
"Since that time, we have suffered an unprovoked attack by the bugbears. How many of you did Lord Richter save? How many of you fought next to him, side by side, as he worked to defend our people? Who stood with him as he comforted the families of the lost afterward?"
Shouts of,
"Me!
I fought with the Lord!
We showed those bugbears they should never have come!"
rung out from the crowd. The villagers were getting fired up. Isabella still wasn't done, though.
"And he saved my love. When those horrible people took Tirad away, our lord immediately chased after those people and single-handedly slew them both and rescued his companion. That is the type of person that our lord is. He is someone who has given me power of my own."
She extended her hand and cast weak, slow heal. There was no target to her spell, but the gold glow surrounded her hand, bright enough to be seen despite the torches and mist light. The villagers exclaimed loudly.
"This very day, Lord Richter gave me the power to heal. He is someone we can trust. He is someone we can put our faith in. He is someone that I pledge my fealty to."
With that, she carefully arranged her skirts and then went down on one knee.
"I formally swear allegiance and loyalty to you, my Lord Richter. From now unto my very death, I will protect you and your interests to the best of my ability and without deceit."
Richter was shocked. He hadn't expected such a profound and public show of support. He walked forward and laid a hand on her shoulder. "I accept your oath of fealty and swear to honor your pledge with the same gravity in which it was given." He offered his hand and helped her back to her feet. He continued to hold her hand as he addressed his people.
"I make the same pledge to all who swear fealty, the same pledge that I have made from the very beginning. As I rise, so too will you rise,"
shouts and cheers echoed out.
"Just north of us in the meadow, a celestial tree bears fruit that will increase our affinities. Our smith is forging enchanted weapons and armor in the forge of heavens to better prepare us for future battles. The winds of change are upon us, and they blow in our direction."
Raucous shouts of happiness rung out in the crowd. Richter waited for the crowd to quiet again.
"I have decided to extend the same terms to our new villagers as I have to the old. You will be paid a fair wage for your work. You will be fed, and you will have a place to stay. These terms will last until the end of the year that my original villagers agreed to. After that, all will be paid for work as appropriate, and will pay for everything else from these wages."
There was an almost palpable sigh of relief. The people who had just come to the village had left all they had known. They had boarded ships in the blind hope that the lord of a forest village would welcome them. It was entirely possible that this unknown leader could have killed them or sold them into slavery. That had been the extent of their desperation to leave Eve. The news that they would be treated fairly and with respect was like a dream come true.
"Everyone here has a choice to make, however. The same choice that you just saw Isabella make. This village is going to be a haven of law and justice. It will continue to be a home for those who need and deserve it. Only those who swear fealty will enjoy the special benefits of residing here, the fruit of the quickening, the weapons of the forge, potions of clarity, and,"
he held Isabella's hand high,
"my ability to awaken your magical power. I want to say again that any who do not swear fealty will be treated fairly. Nothing will change for you. For those of you who will bend the knee once, though, I promise I will help you stand for the rest of your life. What do you choose?
His voice rose through his speech, and at the end he was shouting. Isabella's hand was still in his, and she looked out at the crowd, radiating confidence.
I swear fealty!
Came a shout from the villagers.
Lord Richter!
Came another.
Lord Richter in the Mist Village!
Then the shouts grew too numerous to hear. The villagers surged to their feet and amassed in front of the stage. Most of the first wave of villagers was there. Not too many of the second group of immigrants seemed ready to bend the knee, but Richter was not bothered by this. As he looked out over the mass of loyal followers, he knew that he had time. Shouts of his name continued to fill the air. Despite the fact that he could bend the elements to his will, in that moment he realized that he was experiencing his first true taste of power. He liked it. Chapter 10, Day 102, Kuralt 21, 15,368 EBG. Randolphus organized all those who chose to swear fealty into a line, and they came up to the top of the stage, one after another. The music started again, and the procession adopted a festive air. Sumiko stood next to him and cast Soul's Window on each as they gave their oaths. Happily, everyone that swore fealty was genuine. It took several more hours, but ultimately 237 people bent the knee. Almost every one of his old villagers came forward, as well as dozens of the new villagers. Some villagers brought their children up to pledge allegiance, but after he saw the first small wood elf girl walking towards him, he put a stop to it. A command to Randolphus was all it took, and an official decree was made. No one under the age of 14 could swear fealty. In all honesty, even that was creepily young as far as he was concerned, but the Chamberlain had whispered to him that 14 was the age of adulthood in the River Peninsula. He was happy to see Quasia, Yulindi, and Zar amongst those who pledged their loyalty. All of the non-human elders he had met with in Tirad's Inn so long ago did as well. It also wasn't a big surprise, but was still reassuring when Calder bent the knee. His example brought most of the other guards and their families in line. The ceremony would have gone faster but for two things. He used Analyze on every person that bent the knee and also took the time to try and awaken their life and air magic. After analyzing about 80 of them, he got a series of prompts that brought a smile to his face. Congratulations, you have reached skill level 10 in Analyze. Your understanding of others has deepened on an intrinsic level. You have received 2,500 bonus experience for reaching level 10 in the skill Analyze. Congratulations, you have advanced from the rank of Novice to the rank of Initiate in Analyze. In addition to the information you already receive, you will also be provided with an abbreviated status page showing the creature's attributes. Wow, that could come in useful, Richter thought happily. His good mood was improved at the number of mages he was able to awaken. When all was said and done, he was able to make 3 more air mages from the new villagers and 32 adult life magi between the two groups. Most of the new life magi came from the old villagers, showing again how lucky everyone was that had been present at the birth of the quickening. A wonderful surprise was that Krom had the affinity to become a life mage. The shocked expression on the dwarf's face was priceless. Richter began to laugh, and soon his smith joined him. Weeping was a far more common reaction in many of the villagers. At first, Richter had been concerned, but he soon saw they were tears of joy, and many of the villagers embraced him when the magic was kindled inside of them. One man explained that for his whole life he had felt incomplete, like a piece of his soul was missing. With tears in his eyes, he told Richter that he now felt a hole inside of him had been filled. Each time he was able to feel a resonance inside of one of his subjects, he taught them the level 1 spells that he knew for that discipline. His new life novices were taught Weak Charm, Soul Trap, Weak Cure, and Weak Slow Heal. All of the air mages learned Weak Haste and Weak Errant Wind. Whether they were air or life magicians, the way they looked at him afterward was the same, with adoration and loyalty. Richter had to disable the prompts telling him that his people's disposition towards him had improved. Each new caster's disposition rose by one or two levels. Once the ceremony was done, he left the stage and walked among the children of those who had sworn fealty. With their parents' blessing, he awakened magic in as many as he could. He was able to awaken air magic in two of the children and life magic in 17 more. Randolphus was nearby to record the starting spells of all of them. Most simply received weak slow heal or weak cure poison, but one received weak cure minor disease. Other notable spells were summon luminous butterfly, which just seemed to conjure a dozen small glowing white butterflies for a minute, and call small creature, which would bring the closest small creature running to them. For the next 5 minutes, it would obey simple commands. What Richter was most impressed by, however, was Life Beacon. The spell shot a glowing gold ball high into the air. It would let anyone within a mile know that help was needed, even if they could not see the light. The knowledge seemed to be instinctual. If they were ever attacked again, the spell could be invaluable. Richter was relieved that none of the children had been granted battle magic. The idea of a petulant 5-year-old casting weak charm on her parents was not something he wanted to contemplate. He had known there was a chance that might happen, but the opportunity to have children trained for years in their magic and one day be high-level magic users to fight for his cause was too good to pass up. He would be lying if he said it hadn't also occurred to him that children growing up knowing that they owed their greatest resource to him might in turn feel a great deal of loyalty through the years. Richter saw hushed discussions occurring between some of the parents who hadn't sworn fealty. Seeing such a tangible boon given to other people's children and not their own clearly gave them a lot to think about. No matter their starting spells, he taught each of the children with life magic weak slow heal. He wished he could have taught them summon weak life wisp as well, but their levels weren't high enough. Still, it was a lot better than nothing. He went on to teach all of the air children weak haste. They were the spells that, if ever the village were attacked again, might give the children a fighting chance and could keep them and others alive. Richter pulled Randolphus aside and told him he wanted the children placed in a daily class where they could practice their spells. The Chamberlain made a notation and promised it would be done. The entire feast had been a wild success. Despite the fact that most of the second wave of villagers hadn't sworn fealty, he was happy to see that the new people were meshing well with the old. It warmed his heart to see families reunited. Now that the official work of the night was done, he joined his people to party. Chapter 11, Day 103, Kuralt 22, 15,368 EBG.
"What is that goddamn noise?"
Richter shouted while holding his head. It felt like a tribe of kobolds had taken a dump in his brain. He opened his eyes slightly and immediately groaned.
"Oh, God, that was a horrible idea."
Despite the fact that he had hated what had just happened to him, he had to know what that horrible clanging was. He cracked one eye open again and blearily looked up from the hard surface he was laying on. What he saw didn't make any sense. He knew that the sun was up because there was so much light to see by, but for some reason he was looking at a black sky filled with stars. And what the hell was that god-awful clanging? He painfully opened his other eye while holding a hand up in front of his face to lessen the light that was shooting fire picks, he chuckled slightly into his brain. When he didn't immediately die, which had been a legitimate fear for him, he slowly widened his gaze. A rack of weapons was to his left, and a clear green anvil was sitting on the ground to his right. His hangover-addled brain started piecing these clues together, and he realized he was lying on the floor of the Forge of Heavens. He started to get up, but lost his balance and fell back down, one hand flying up above his head.
"Ow!"
a grumpy and ladylike voice said. Richter looked behind him and saw a beautiful wood elf woman who seemed to only be wearing his cloak of concealment. The cape had adopted the smooth white appearance of the marbled quartz it was set against. Grey lines even shot across the material, blending near perfectly with the floor. It did nothing to hide the pale, shapely leg that stuck out from one side, or the beautiful face and mop of red hair that peeked out of the top of the cloak. He had inadvertently slapped the woman's chest with his hand. His first thought upon seeing this was that it couldn't have hurt too much, since she had so much padding in that particular region. "Sorry," he wheezed out. She grumbled slightly without opening her eyes and faded back into sleep. Judging by what he was seeing, he'd had an amazing time the night before, but he just didn't remember it. He used Analyze and found that her name was Lorala. Seeing her name on the prompt triggered a memory. He groaned again as he remembered drunkenly walking up to her and saying, "Hey, sexy lady, how'd you like me to show you heaven?" That was how they had ended up in the forge. He attempted to stand again, and this time succeeded, though he had to lean against the weapons rack to stay upright. That was the moment that he had his next grand realization. He was naked. Firmly believing that walking around a forge in his birthday suit would be a bad idea, he cast about for his bag of holding. Sure enough, it was only a few feet away. He retrieved it and found his clothes strewn about next to it. He put on his small clothes, pants, shirt, and shoes. Richter had no idea what had happened to his armor because it wasn't in his inventory. He guessed that it had something to do with the black scorch mark on his chest and why his health was down a few points. He didn't waste more time with that, though. He had an important mission. The mission was to find whoever the fuck was making all that noise, kill them, and then sow their lands with salt. He left the naked goddess under his cloak and stumbled around the weapons rack. His head throbbed with every clang of metal on metal. After picking his head up and squinting very hard, he saw a dwarf at the main elementum anvil. Richter knew he was imagining it, but he could swear that he saw a red outline around the man, clearly marking him as an enemy that must be destroyed. As he got closer, his bleary eyesight showed a salt-and-pepper beard and a familiar face.
"Stop!" he croaked. "Ah, your lordship!" Crumb said loudly. "That was some shindig last night."
The dwarf put down the hammer and left what looked to be the back of Richter's chest armor on the anvil.
Whoa, what happened?"
Crom let out a hearty bellow that made Richter hate him slightly.
"Well, everyone was having a good time, and then you said you wanted something called a shot. Zara asked you what that was, and you said that you wished that the ale we had was stronger. Right after that, Zar cast some spell on all the casks, and that'd be when the party really got going. When you did that thing with Alma, I laughed so hard ale came out of me nose.
Richter shook his head, confused.
"Alma? What does Alma have to..."
The rest of his question was cut off as he let out a rather ladylike scream. His familiar had chosen that moment to speak with him, and her psychic volume was turned way up.
"Master! Master, my head hurts!"
"Alma, please stop thinking so loud,"
he shouted reflexively while grabbing his head in both hands. Then, not wanting her to mentally shout at him again, he thought to her, "Please think softer, my love. Where are you?" He heard a pitiful mewling and then saw her drunkenly flap up from where she had been resting behind a bucket. Seeing her hovering in midair brought back another series of memories, him offering her a sip of his drink, her liking it and then sticking her face deep into someone else's mug and drinking more. A bunch of other stuff had happened. Then Sion had dared him to do... something. His memory got fuzzy again. He reached up to rub his aching head and felt a twinge in his chest again. Suddenly, Richter's eyes grew wide as it all came flooding back.
"No fucking way,"
he said to himself. He hadn't been dumb enough to... "Crom," he said in a grave voice.
"Yes, your lordship,"
the smith said with joy in his voice.
"Did I climb back up on top of the stage last night?"
he asked, knowing what the answer would be.
"Oh, you did indeed, my lord."
Crom was clearly enjoying himself. And when I was up there, did I shout, "Someone call Kenny Loggins because I'm about to go into the danger zone?" Yes, you did. Well, that part was confusing for all of us, but what happened next more than made up for it. Crumb's grin was threatening to split his beard in half. Richter just nodded. He could well believe what had happened next would have been what people really remembered. Because what had happened next was that first he had shouted at Alma, "Do it!" And then she had obeyed and unleashed a lightning bolt directly into his chest. The bolt had struck him dead center, and the force of it had knocked him off his feet and consequently off the podium. At a guess, the 15-foot fall was why Crom was now hammering a dent out of the backplate. Richter closed his eyes and nodded to himself. That was possibly not his finest moment. He opened his eyes and asked, "Is there anything else that I want to know about last night?" Alma had made her way to his shoulders and basically collapsed onto him. The poor thing was still mewling pitifully. Crom scratched his beard.
"Anything that you want to know? Well, that I can't say for sure. But I can tell you one thing that everyone else knows now."
Richter took a second to control a wave of nausea and then said,
"What's that?"
"The Mist Village can party!"
Despite the throbbing in his head, Richter smiled back. Then he vomited just a bit into his mouth. After washing his mouth out and spitting several times, he thought about the sexy woman he had woken up next to and decided that all in all, it had been a great night.
"Can I assume you have the rest of my armor here?"
"Aye, my lord."
Crom reached to the other side of the anvil and lifted up the other pieces, setting them by the chest plate.
"And rest assured, this dwarf will be ready to fight at noon. I could use a good hunt. Now, go see if you can bring that young lass you have back there back to life. From the noises I heard coming out of her before dawn, you fair killed her last night. Ha!"
With that last quip, Crom walked away. Richter cast weak, slow heal to fix the damage to his chest. Then he donned his armor and withdrew his sword from his bag. He shooed Alma off of his shoulders to the sounds of her protest and then fastened the sword onto his back. He was ready to greet his bedmate, floormate, of the night before, except for one thing. He plunged his head straight down into a barrel of water. The chill water cleared some of the cobwebs from his brain, and he drank his fill. When he straightened up, he felt much more alert. He walked back to where he had left her. "Loralla? Loralla, it's time to wake up." The elf maiden, well, definitely not a maiden anymore from what Richter remembered, opened her eyes, and he was able to see that her irises were the same green as Elementum. She smiled sleepily at him and said,
"Good morrow, my lord. Was I so fearsome last night that you must gear for battle before we go again?"
Richter chuckled at her saucy reply.
"I would never put armor on before joining you in bed. Why would I when all I want is for you to slay me again and again?"
"Well, I knocked you down at least 5 times last night, but you just kept getting up. I suppose it would only be polite for me to do the same, though I believe eating that much Starzenia was cheating."
With that, she stood and let the smooth material of the cloak flow off of her body and pool on the ground. Richter let out a slow and appreciative whistle. She was 5'10 or 5'11. Apple-sized breasts sat firm on her chest, and her white skin contrasted with deep pink nipples. His gaze traveled downward to a trim waist and flat stomach, not muscular, but also with little fat. His eyes traced the curve of her hip inward, and he observed her femininity in all of its glory, contrasting on her skin like an apple floating in cream. She looked at his expression of appreciation and gave a slightly throaty chuckle. Her voice was a smooth alto as she said,
"I'm glad you appreciate the view, my lord. Last night you seemed quite pleased that my carpet matched my drapes, as you put it."
Richter chuckled as well and said, "Well, thank you for last night." Then his male brain started scrambling. "I'm not sure how things are supposed to go now. I'm also not sure what I might have said last night, but I'm not really in a good place for a relationship.
I was also kind of seeing this other girl back on Earth, and even though we're probably separated by at least 12 parsecs now, I still don't think I'm in the right emotional space to make it serious. He stopped talking because she laughed at his babbling.
You humans and your conservative views. I'm not some stuffy high-elf spinster to deny myself the passion I deserve. Do not feel bad about enjoying me and having to leave.
She gathered her dress and slipped it on over her head. Then she walked up to him, grabbed the back of his head, and kissed him soundly.
After all, I'm the one who used you.
She let him go and started walking away. Seeing the cockiness in her stride, Richter realized it would be more accurate to say she sauntered away. Looking at her back in bemusement, he called after her, "But I came up and propositioned you!" She looked back and winked.
"Keep telling yourself that, Lord Richter."
She walked off into the early morning light.
"This world definitely has its perks," he said to himself. It was also good news that he had taken the Star Zenia. He didn't need any little Richters running around right now.
He looked around for someone to share this moment with, but didn't see anyone. So as Alma settled on his shoulders once again, he gave himself a high five and walked out to greet the day. As he walked away from the forge over to the Great Seal, he sent out a mental call for Futin. Looking around, he saw more and more people passed out in various states of undress. Some were up, but it looked like they were hating life as they stumbled through their walks of shame. Richter shook his head and said, "Fuck you, Czar. What did you turn the beer into? Chloroform?" With no one around to appreciate his wit, he just kept walking, and his head continued to throb. He tried to distract himself from his discomfort by checking on his notification log. Apparently, he had auto-minimized everything during his speech and the party afterwards. Know this, your village has grown by leaps and bounds. Never forget, there are consequences to your actions. Your village had 269 souls with an average morale of plus 852 and an average loyalty of plus 515. You have now added 298 souls with an average morale of plus 117 and an average loyalty of zero. The following adjustments have been made to your village values. Morale decreased by 386, total morale plus 465. Loyalty decreased by 145, total loyalty plus 244. The morale of your village has decreased from delighted, plus 500, to happy, plus 250. Your people move about their day with smiles on their faces. Rank reward, plus 5% to population growth, plus 5% to productivity, plus 5% to fighting spirit. The loyalty of your village has decreased from enthusiastic, plus 500, to neutral, zero. The loyalty of your people has decreased to the point that it has no effect upon productivity. Know this, your leadership has inspired more than 25% of your villagers to swear fealty. Ongoing changes in loyalty are now twice as effective. Know this, the loyalty change from your tenant, an honorable ruler one, has increased from plus 0.5 to plus 1 loyalty increase per day. Max increased plus 15 per 500. Richter thought. What was it the Aes Sedai said? The rule of three consequences or something like that? He hadn't really thought about how adding more people to his village might take away the perks that the increased morale and loyalty had granted. Also, being only a few points shy of the next loyalty rank felt like a real kick to the cosmic nads. He supposed it made sense, though. Like adding water to dark red Kool-Aid, there would be more to go around, but it would definitely be less sweet. The bump to his tenant was a nice surprise, though. It meant the loyalty of the village should be back up in just a few days. He definitely wanted that productivity bonus again. Richter smiled as he saw a series of prompts that showed increases in the regard that many of the villagers had for him. There were dozens of them, and he quickly saw that they were the people whose magic had been awakened. He hadn't expected such an outpouring of love when he had made his new magi, but he would take it. This time, the rule of three worked in his favor. He closed all of the prompts and saw Futin floating towards him.
"Greetings, my lord," he said in his deadpan voice.
"Good morning, Futin. Is anyone looking for me?
Not that I'm aware of, my lord.
Well, what time is it?
It is 2 hours until noon, Lord Richter.
Okay. Find Glorin, Basil, and Randolphus, and have them meet me at the feast area. I need to get some breakfast. Then go over to the ships and have Hafiz's sons meet me as well. I think they've waited long enough.
Futin said farewell and floated off to do as he was bid.
Are you ready for some food, my love?
She didn't respond for a second, but then she thought, poutingly,
Yes, master.
So they started off on the epic quest to find some grub. Chapter 12, Day 103, Keralt 22, 15,368 EBG. Richter was digging into his second helping of eggs, potatoes, and venison, all the while bemoaning the lack of ketchup when Randolphus came up.
Greetings, my lord. I am pleased to see that you survived the night.
Richter smiled at the disapproving man standing on the other side of the table.
Things did get a little wild last night, huh?
Well, when the dwarves started playing noggins, I decided it was time to retire for the night.
Richter's face wrinkled in confusion. He didn't remember that at all.
Noggins?
Randolphus sighed.
It involves a round of singing, where the dwarves walk in a circle, occasionally changing direction. When the song stops, whichever dwarves are at the top and the bottom of the circle run at each other full pelt until they slam their heads together. If you get knocked down, you are knocked out of the game. There is, of course, a large amount of drinking involved as well.
Richter didn't even need to ask if he had joined that particular game. The fact that he didn't have a skull fracture made it clear that he hadn't.
So what you're saying is, you threw a truly epic party, my lord.
Yes, Richter said, nodding sagely.
Yes, I did. I'm surprised that you would admit that, though, Randy.
You ordered me to tell you that last night, my lord,
Randolphus said somewhat sourly.
Yes,
Richter said again, gently stroking his chin in satisfaction. Then he smiled at his chamberlain.
I've asked Futin to bring Hafiz's sons to meet me. I wanted you here so we could make sure to place orders for anything that the village needs. Now, while we're waiting, is there anything else we need to speak about?
Well, my lord, now that you mention it,
Randolphus kept talking, and Richter went on autopilot, just saying yes or no perfunctorily. His conscious thoughts were replaying the meow scene from Super Troopers and wondering if Whoopi and Picard had gotten busy on the Enterprise. Thankfully, he was saved before too much time had passed. Basil walked up to the table they were sitting at and plopped down next to Randolphus. The man's shirt was slightly torn, and a large stain that looked like dried ale covered his front. Richter could see a burgeoning bruise on the trader's left cheek, and the man had some twigs and pieces of leaves in his hair.
What was in that ale, my lord?
Basil's voice quavered and randomly rose and fell in pitch.
Was it demons? Did that damn earth mage put demons in the ale?
Richter looked at the man in amused shock. He'd never seen the outwardly uptight man talk like that before. Basil saw his lord looking at him in surprise and misinterpreted the gaze for one of rebuke.
I apologize, Lord Richter. I just have a bit of a headache.
Richter didn't want the man to clam back up into a conservative shell. Don't worry about it. I'm still looking for the cat.
What cat?
Basil asked, confused. The one that must have shit in my mouth while I was sleeping last night, Richter replied with a completely straight face. Basil just looked at him with surprise of his own for a moment, then started chuckling. Even Randolphus laughed aloud at that one, and all three men enjoyed the camaraderie you can only find by having drunk deeply from the cup of Bacchus and having lived to tell the tale. Whenever the laughter started to die, one of them would add another ribald comment, and the levity would be revived. A few minutes later, Richter was wiping tears from his eyes. One of the village men had brought over large platters of food and set them down on the table. Randolphus explained that he thought a bit of food might make the negotiations go smoother. For the thousandth time, Richter marveled at his luck in finding his chamberlain. Then he wondered if it really was his luck characteristic having come into play. If so, he would need to add more to the esoteric stat ASAP. Once Basil had eaten some food and, at Richter's strong urging, had a bit of the hair of the dog that had bit him, the former Eve merchant looked more alert. Richter decided to broach the topic at hand. Basil? The man looked up from his plate at hearing the serious undertone in his lord's voice. He swallowed the last bite he had taken, put his knife down, and gave Richter his full attention. We have a fight coming our way. If the past weeks have taught me anything, it's that these mists are not an absolute defense. We need to get stronger, and we need more allies.
Basil nodded. I understand, my lord. I am ready and willing to do whatever I can to serve.
Good man, Richter said, nodding. Tomorrow, I want you to leave at first light. You are to go to the Serrated Mountains and treat with the dwarf tribes. Your primary goal should be to get fighters that are willing to come down to the forest and fight the bugbears and their allies. A secondary, but almost as important goal, is to foster relations between the Mist Village and the groups that you find. I want to be clear that I'm not expecting miracles. This is just a first step. After you leave this table, I want you to go see Crom. He is to give you any weapons and armor that you need. After that, I want you to spend the day getting as much information about the dwarves from him and anyone else in the village that can be helpful. Tell them that helping you is to take precedence over anything else they may be doing. Knowing Crom, you will probably get some pushback. Tell him that I have to come make the point myself, then Alma will be making the point with lightning. The dragonling looked up from where she was filching morsels from Basil's plate. She flared her wings happily and then unashamedly grabbed a piece of meat in her forepaws and started tearing off hunks with her sharp teeth. Richter smiled at her lovingly. Then he reached into his bag and pulled out three purses. These two have 100 gold coins each. From what Crom told me, money talks and bullshit walks with the dwarves of the mountains. Basil smiled at hearing that unknown idiom, but the meaning was clear enough that Richter didn't need to explain this time. He continued speaking. I'm sure that you are not going to convince anyone of the rightness of our cause just by words. I'm equally sure that you're going to have to bribe some people to get through certain territories and to get certain introductions. Use the money as you will. Once you get in to see the chiefs or kings or whatever the hell the main man calls himself, that's when you use this pouch. He tapped the larger brown hide bag. I have 20 potions of clarity in here. These are to be given as gifts of respect and as a taste of what the village can offer to friends and good trading partners. Now, with all that being said, I have already seen among the dwarves in the village that there are certain factions, like the Bone Crusher Clan, that I don't think we would mesh well with. I won't fully write a group off without meeting them personally, but I want you to use your own intuition and Crom's advice to decide if there are any groups you should avoid. Keep in mind, as you meet these tribes and clans, that every potential ally is also a potential enemy. Do not invite a snake into our garden. You'll be going with 2 dwarves that Crom recommends as guides and liaisons. I'll also be sending 10 guards with you. Basil listened to the entire long speech without interrupting. When Richter was done, he asked a few targeted questions. After that, he just said, I won't let you down, sir. Richter half stood and reached across the table. Basil did the same, and the 2 men clasped wrists. When they let go, the traitor was going to leave, but Richter bid him stay a bit longer. He could see 4 men approaching, led by Futin. He could only assume that they were Hafiz's sons. Though Basil would be an integral part in preparing for the future war with the bugbears, Richter was fairly certain that a different type of conflict was about to happen right now. It would be bloodless, and it would be economic, but he was glad Basil's business experience could help in this arena as well. Richter stood, and his chamberlain and diplomat followed suit. A mental command was enough for Alma to abandon the rest of her breakfast and fly to perch on his broad shoulders. They stood waiting as the 4 men approached. All were clad in the same white silk and red sash that he had seen their father wear. They also wore white turbans, but that was where the physical similarities ended. He remembered Hafiz as a short, portly fellow that looked just like the nice sultan in Aladdin. Basically a kindly but shrewd grandfather. These guys looked more like sons of anarchy. Each was at least 6 feet tall, and they had strong, angular faces covered in well-trimmed beards. Their tunics were sleeveless, and large muscles stood out in easily followed definition on their arms.
Their skin was the color of toasted almonds, and their weathered faces spoke of a life of frequent travel. They wore empty sheaths at their waists that were curved as if built for scimitars. Each had an intense expression, and they looked around as if noting every little detail of what they saw. There was a clear hierarchy in how they walked. One pulled up the rear, holding a small metal chest. He followed the two in the middle, who walked with a sure dignity, but the lead man, who seemed a bit older than the rest, exuded a palpable sense of authority. The two men in the middle were carrying a large wooden chest banded with high steel and with a thick padlock clearly seen on the front. Four of Richter's guards followed closely behind. Calder was among them. Richter was pleased to see that they were taking the security of the village so seriously. There might have been a time when he would have thought that an armed escort for trading partners was overkill. He wouldn't be so cavalier with the safety of his village again. The fact that Tirad and Calder seemed to be on the same page was one less thing he had to worry about. The white-clad men stopped a good 10 feet away from Richter. The leader of the group spoke.
"I bring you greetings, O great leader of the Mist Village."
The man's voice was a rich bass booming across the small space that separated them.
"My father wishes you good health and prosperity. He wishes that he could be here to meet his good friend in person, but hopes that you will accept myself, his eldest son, and my brothers as a poor substitute."
The man swept his right arm far out to the side and crossed his left arm across his waist as he went into a deep bow. His brothers placed the chest on the ground and then swept into identical bows. They held that pose, and Randolphus cleared his throat slightly but poignantly. Richter looked at him, and the chamberlain indicated the four men with a slight crook of his neck. Taking the cue, Richter took a step forward and said, "I accept this greeting in the grand spirit with which it was given. When you see your father, tell him that I look forward to the day that we can sit together again. Until that time comes, however, I am delighted to meet the sons of the man I hope to one day embrace as a brother." All four men smoothly rose from their bows. The lead man looked Richter in the eye and nodded slightly. Richter suddenly felt like he had passed some sort of test. He smiled to himself. If the man wanted to match flowery language, he shouldn't go toe-to-toe with someone who had grown up listening to Sting and Sade. Tired of not knowing what to call him, Richter used Analyze. Name, Abbas. Human, level 11. Health, 170. Mana, 110. Stamina, 160. Disposition, neutral. Humans are one of the shortest-lived but most prolific breeders in the land. Humans have a broader affinity for skills than other races. No special bonuses to race. Humans get 4 points to distribute per level. Profession, trader. Suddenly Richter was both happy and bothered. Happy that he had learned more about the man he was about to be negotiating with, and also that he had had Basil stay with him. He was definitely bothered that he was about to negotiate with a professed trader, though. That made him realize that he had never actually used Analyze on Hafiz. Richter had thought that he had done well in those negotiations, but if the man was an old trader, he had probably been fleeced.
"My name is Abbas, Lord Richter. May we approach?"
Richter schooled his face so that his discomfort didn't show. At least he hoped he did. For all he knew, traders had a talent that let them read micro-expressions. Not wanting to draw the moment out, he smiled expansively and swept an arm towards the food-laden table. "Of course. We have set out some food so that you can break your fast. Please eat and drink. We can talk about the future of our relationship after that." The four men moved over to sit at the table. Before they started to eat, however, all four moved their hands in a circle over their food and said a short phrase in a language Richter hadn't heard before. His gift of tongues ability translated it to, "For the bounty our success has brought, we thank you, dear lady." Speaking in the common tongue, Richter couldn't resist asking, "Was that a prayer? I was under the impression that all gods had been banished from the land." Abbas nodded in understanding.
"You are, of course, correct, Lord Richter. That does not mean that the teachings of Our Lady Naja are any less valuable. The wisdom of the Lady of Good Fortune has guided the actions of our family since long before the Great Binding. We offer a prayer to her in thanks and remembrance.
Richter gazed back at the man, pondering what he had just heard. Blind faith was a challenge in and of itself, but he had to reason that it must be even harder to know that your god is real and that she has been forcibly taken from you. For a family to remain devout for centuries and millennia after that, what did it say about them? Richter wasn't sure, but he was fairly certain it meant he should take them seriously. As he opened his mouth to continue the conversation, another thought occurred to him. Were there any other pockets of faithful followers out there? What would they be like if, instead of luck, their god had been one of death or pain? Richter blinked such cheery thoughts away. Well, I would love to hear more about your Lady Naja at some point, but not right now. I insist that you eat. Can I offer you refreshment? Some ale or water, perhaps? They all made small talk for about 20 minutes as Abbas and his brothers ate their fill. He introduced his brothers as Fali, Mahir, and Kadar. Luckily, none of them were professed traders, though Fali and Mahir were both above level 10, so he assumed their trading skill just hadn't reached journeyman rank yet. Once they had committed enough time to the niceties, they got down to business.
In addition to greetings, my father has sent a gift in appreciation of our profitable relationship.
At Abbas's gesture, Kadar, the youngest brother, placed the small chest on the table, angling the front towards Richter. He opened the lid and revealed that the inside was lined with crushed purple velvet. Sitting on a cushion of the same color was a bracelet. Two clear red gems sat on a braided band of gold. Futin glowed white, identifying the object without asking. You have found Bracelet of Holmes Heart. Durability 43 of 43. Item class scarce. Quality superb. Weight 0.2 kilograms. Traits. The gems on this bracelet are actually two halves of a whole. Expertly cut, the jewel is a rare drop from a silver wyvern. The last drop of its blood crystallized to embody the speed and grace of this aerial predator. That magic has been preserved. Now the wearer of this bracelet may leave one of the gems in any location they choose. If the magic of the bracelet is then activated, the wearer will gain the ability of flight and be pulled at the maximum flying speed of a silver wyvern to the location where the other jewel was left. This is a one-use item, which will be destroyed afterwards. Richter's eyes widened as he read the item's description. This was the first example of fast travel he had actually seen. The calculations for portals were rattling around somewhere in the back of his head, but the cost of making one, let alone two of the expensive things, just wasn't feasible yet. Hafiz truly had given him an amazing gift. This meant that he could escape a horrible situation, or come rushing back to defend his village if need be. He would have to think very carefully about where to place the gem he would be coming back to. Richter stood and bowed slightly. This truly is an amazing gift. I do not know what to say. I and my people thank you. The four brothers stood and bowed deeply in return. They sat back down, but Richter remained standing. In my travels and adventures, I have come across many wonders. One of the most beautiful, however, was this. He reached into his bag of holding and pulled out a gem-encrusted bracelet. Small diamonds formed the spine of the red-gold bracelet, and the two ends shined green. One end was a dragon's head with emeralds set as eyes. The other was a tail made of creamy jade. The quality of craftsmanship was such that the piece looked like it could come to life at any moment. When Richter had examined the item, it had registered as masterwork. Richter held it hidden in his hands until he spread them apart like a book opening, leaving the jewelry balanced on his palms. The reaction he received was more than he expected. Fali and Mahir immediately began speaking to each other quietly in their native tongue. Richter could understand them, though they didn't know that, and heard them exclaiming over the value of the piece. Kadar actually breathed the word Tefanim, which earned him a cuff from one of his older brothers.
Richter noticed all of this peripherally, as most of his attention was on Abbas. The lead brother showed no reaction, at least not one that Richter could detect. The man raised his eyes from the gold dragon and looked Richter in the eye.
"Do you know what this is, my lord?"
"It is a gift for your father. It is also a piece of jewelry from the Tefanim people." Abbas licked his lip